This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We want to get to the bottom of it. What do these latest developments mean for America's pastime, quote unquote? We're pleased to welcome Pete Abraham, longtime baseball reporter and insider from the Boston Globe. And Pete, we have this weird reversal from Commissioner Manfred. Last week, of course, he was 100% confident because he could mandate the season under that March agreement and he could set a start date. And now his confidence has waned. I don't understand why, and I don't know what changed, Pete, but what sense can you make of this?
Well, it seems like that baseball, the ownership and Commissioner Manfred are worried about a grievance being filed by the union that they bargained in bad faith and that could cost potentially millions of dollars, if not $1 billion, if it's settled that way. Now, this is something that's always on the table when you're talking about labor agreements, and baseball now wants at the 11th hour for the union to say, well, we won't, you know, we'll give up those rights and we won't file a grievance. That's obviously a non-starter with the union. So to go from, you know, just tell us when and where we'll go out there and play, to now saying, well, we're not sure we're going to play. It's such a, you know, a couple, 3 days where everything has changed in baseball for the worse. And now it's looking like a very distinct possibility that there could be no season this summer.
When you hear the players blast Commissioner Rob Manfred for the way, well, not just his comments, but the way that he's presented this to the public, what's your reaction? The players seem like they're nearly unanimous in their almost hatred now of the way this is playing out.
Yeah, this is the first time in a while we've seen the union this together on an issue, and that has to be unsettling for baseball because in the past they've always been able to take advantage of that to some degree and push through. Whether it was the collective bargaining agreement or other reforms, they were able to do things without the union really opposing it so much. And now that's obviously changed with the players unified. And like you said, AB, you know, basically their distrust of Rob Manfred. And that's a bad sign for baseball. But to me, and I wrote about this earlier today, you know, every other sport was able to put aside whatever differences they had and come up with a plan to restart their games once, you know, it was allowed under the rules of the pandemic and everything else that was going on around the country. And all of that was happened pretty quickly, pretty quietly. There was no rancor. There was no going back and forth and anonymous statements to the media and all that sort of thing. But baseball somehow couldn't do that. And you wonder, how could they not do that given everything that was at stake, the massive unemployment, people dying, all of the different things that have happened in the country in the last 4 months, that they couldn't put aside whatever dislike they had of each other to do the right thing, at least for this one period of time. And it really speaks poorly of the people who are running the game, both on the union side and I think on the major league, on the MLB side of it.
Why? The major question is, why couldn't they do that? Why?
Well, I think this all goes back to the last collective bargaining agreement that the players agreed to and then quickly realized that they had signed a bad agreement, that this wasn't going to work for them financially very well. That's proven to be the case. Their salaries have gone down the last couple of years, which is unprecedented in the free agent era. And they seem to feel like they need to say no to everything now to try to get what they want down the road. But to me, you could have sat down when this all, you know, going back in March and saying, listen, this is an unprecedented time. We've never been through anything like this before. Let's both agree to just make a good deal right now, get something accomplished so we can start the season. And we won't look at this as precedent for our next round of negotiations. We won't look at this as a sign of weakness or a sign of strength. We'll just sit down and do the right thing. And then when the time comes, you know, we'll hash out our collective bargaining agreement in 18 months. I don't know why that they couldn't have done that. That seems like what the NBA and the NHL and right. All these other sports were able to accomplish that. And somehow baseball couldn't put aside their own selfish interests to do what was right for everybody else.
Pete Abraham covers baseball, the Red Sox, for the Boston Globe with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. You recently posted on your Twitter a headline about how baseball is a great sport. So many people love it. But as we've learned once again over these last few weeks, the game does not love you back. Pete, is this reversible?
Well, if in the next 48 hours they say, hey, we've made an agreement, we're going to play, come to the ballpark on July 10th and we'll have games, then yeah, I think that's the case. And people will forget pretty quickly all about these issues when they get to see Mike Trout play and they get to see, you know, Clayton Kershaw on the mound and Max Scherzer and the Nationals get their rings, all that sort of stuff. Everybody will be pretty pleased. But it's just, to me, it just speaks to a larger issue of how could they just be so self-centered and really like, you know, they had to know, obviously, what's going on around the country. How could they not make that their focus instead of fighting over money? It's just, I understand that it's pro sports and there are times when you have to fight over the money. It's necessary. But to do it now, it's unseemly. It's such a bad look for the game.
Rob Manfred still has this power, going back to the March agreement, that's given to him by the owners, by the union, to set the start date. And as the players have said over and over, tell us when, tell us where, we will show up. Do you think it's true that the owners and the commissioner are delaying right now because they realize if they would set the start date, there's plenty of time to get in more than 50 games?
Yeah, that's one thought, that people think that he's stalling to try to, so there would be less of a season and the owners would, they claim, lose less money with fans not being allowed into the parks. The players dispute that they wouldn't necessarily lose a lot of money without fans coming to parks. But the financial part of it aside, it just seems like there's too much maneuvering on both sides and trying to get the upper hand instead of just coming to the table and saying, listen, what do we need to do to play 50 games or 60 games? And then once that's over with, we'll figure out the rest of our problems.
Mm. Do you think that there are owners who are in dire financial straits that couldn't absorb the losses?
Well, I certainly, you know, every team is not the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cubs,
right,
and have unlimited resources. There's certainly teams out there. I mean, at one point, the Oakland Athletics didn't want to pay their minor leaguers $400 a week, and they reversed that after a ton of public pressure. So there are teams out there that look at $400 a week to minor leaguers as an expense they don't want to make. So obviously there are some issues around the game, but you would also think at this time that the owners of the teams that are wealthy could say, you know, just for this once, you know, we'll work together. And if the A's or the Reds or some other small market team is going through tough times making payroll, we'll help you out. And we'll figure out a way to pay that back. You know, there has to be a way that these guys could have worked together so that all 30 teams could have successfully put their product on the field. And how did that not happen? I mean, it is, to me, there needed to be a lot more unity towards the common goal of getting baseball on the field and giving people something to watch and something to enjoy. And that just seems to have gone missing in all of this.
Yeah, they've definitely missed a window here where they could have been one of the only games in town, certainly one of the only top four sport. So, Pete, maybe this is just me, but I find it completely ironic that there's really no talk about the virus at all around baseball. All the talk is about money, not about the health and safety.
Yeah, they've pretty close to agreeing on the health and safety part of it, that the protocols are in place. Both sides agree to them. They're going to play games to the degree that they're allowed to at their home parks. There won't be any fans. They have plans in place. Like, for instance, they wouldn't use the dugout. There would only be so many people allowed in the dugout. Mm-hmm. Everybody else would sit in the stands 6 feet apart from each other, and that there would be a taxi squad instead of minor leagues. There would be expanded rosters. They figured out a lot of those things. This really now is all just about the money. But of all the sports, too, Amy, this is the other thing. Baseball is set up to be socially distanced for the
right,
most part.
Right.
You know, it would seem to be, you know, as opposed to football and basketball and hockey, there's very few collisions. There's really no need for guys to be next to each other all that much other than the catcher and the batter. You would think that that's one sport that you could put it together pretty quickly and have games and cut down on, you know, the chances of somebody contracting the coronavirus.
Mm. Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. In the other sports, we have heard, though, that there are some athletes who either think they've got family members who are high risk or aren't necessarily willing to put their health, on the table like this. Have you heard any of that in baseball where there might be guys that aren't interested in returning?
Well, I do wonder if you know, Manfred says, okay, we're going to have a 48-game season. If some of the guys who have long-term contracts and have already made a ton of money will say, you know, it's not worth my risk to play a 48-game season, so I'm going to sit this one out. And the one thing I did hear, there was a few, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, part of the solution they thought would be they would play all of their games in Arizona and that they would use the spring training parks and they would have like a bubble environment like what the NBA is trying to do.
Right.
And a lot of the players pushed back against that. They didn't like the idea of not seeing their families for that long a period of time. And that plan went by the boards. So the biggest pushback I've heard from the players was more that bubble concept than it was the idea of playing. But I would imagine if there are guys who have members in their families who are, you know, immunocompromised or have other issues, I'm sure they're going to have to very carefully consider whether they want to go out and do this.
So we're continuing with Pete. Pete, thanks so much for hanging on. As this baseball season or the potential for a baseball season wastes away, it dawns on me that this is so nutty. Mookie Betts may not play any games with the Dodgers if they can't come to an agreement, or it could be a very small number of games. Isn't that crazy?
Well, and if you look at it from the Red Sox standpoint, they obtained those three prospects for Mookie Betts. Those guys are their property, and they are going to be for 6 years now. And the Dodgers, every game that goes by without playing, the Dodgers get less value out of Mookie Betts. And certainly they would have never made this trade if they knew they weren't going to get, you know, now what could it be, 50 games or whatever it might be out of Mookie Betts.
Ugh.
Now, if the Dodgers somehow win the championship, and I'm sure they'll feel it was a good deal, but if Mookie only plays, you know, several dozen games, whatever it might be, and they don't win the World Series, that's going to go back, you know, they're going to look back on that trade with a lot of regrets, unless he likes it with the Dodgers so much that he stays with them once he becomes a free agent.
The whole idea of having a World Series champion after a couple dozen games, even as you were saying that, I mean, I've considered it before, but hearing you say that, Pete, it sounds so ridiculous.
Yeah, I think I mentioned when I was talking about, I think I put it on Twitter the other day too, that, so what would the parade be, like a block and a half, or like, would you go to the mall to get your championship ring? Like, how would that all work? And I just wonder, like, if I'm sure, like, let's say a team that hasn't won the World Series, like the Seattle Mariners somehow win the World Series. I'm sure they'll be thrilled, right? It's the first time they've ever won a World Series before. But if you're the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cubs, how could you, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to have a big display and get all excited? I mean, it would seem kind of farcical if you did something like that.
It would, for sure. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about this other piece that keeps popping up in my brain. How could this have worked any better for Alex Cora and AJ Hinch? I mean, they're suspended for a season. I guess you could throw Jeff Luhnow in there as well. But these two guys are suspended for a baseball season. They don't even have to sit back and watch anybody play baseball. Their entire suspension could be covered in a 2020 season that has no games.
Yeah, they've essentially missed nothing other than a few weeks of spring training. And the way that they decided that back in March was this counts. This counts as their suspension. So for those guys, I mean, I'm sure to some degree, you know, they missed the interaction with their players, and they're both smart guys. I'm sure they like to be part of the solution to all of this. But yeah, it's the only people who really benefited, it seems like, would be those three guys. Mm-hmm. And when you think back about, you know, all the outrage about what they did, and people were, you know, people in Boston were very upset with Cora and all this other stuff, that all looks pretty insignificant. And when you look at what's going on now, right? I mean, guys are stealing signs. I mean, all right, well, compared to everything else going on in the country, that's fallen way down the list of things to be upset about.
Exactly. It's like we haven't heard about the Astros in months, which, you know, for good reason. Any chance the Red Sox will ask Cora back, or that, you know, they will work together again?
You know, that's the big question of Boston. And Chaim Bloom, who was very happy to have Alex Cora as his manager right up until January, has given the same answer every time, that the reason that Alex is no longer the manager hasn't changed, that they felt there was, you know, what he did in Houston merited his no longer being the manager of the Red Sox, and that hasn't changed. Now, he hasn't said absolutely positively not, we will not bring Alex Cora back, but he is kind of said everything but that. And I do think if you're a new general manager, you want your own manager. And not that Cora and Bloom couldn't have worked together. Maybe they would have worked together very well. But now that he has a chance to go out and hire his own guy, somebody he knows will be loyal to him, I would think if you're in his position, any executive in that position would want to do that. And if the Red Sox owners, it will be hard to commit to Bloom as your chief baseball officer for as long as they did, and then say, well, that's great, but you can't hire the next manager. I would think, you know, he's going to want to hire the next manager. That would be a deal breaker.
Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. If you don't mind, Pete, before I let you go, the Red Sox have had an image, a reputation. Well, Boston has, not so much the Red Sox organization, but Boston's had a reputation of having a core of fans who treat African-American players poorly, you know, who yell racial epithets at them. And we've had a couple of players who've come out, like Torrey Hunter, and said that is the case. Kevin Youkilis has said, hey, I've heard this. In light of everything that's happened, in light of the change, you know, the change with the manager and ownership and everything that's happened over the last couple of decades, how much do you believe it's changed in Boston?
I don't think it's changed enough. And the Red Sox, it's not just the fans. The Red Sox, as an organization, have had a very poor reputation. They were the last team to have a player on the have a black player on the roster. It wasn't until 1959. There was that story from long ago that they had a tryout with Willie Mays at Fenway Park, and the owners at the time didn't want anything to do with Willie Mays. So there's things like that that have gone down in history. They had an incident in spring training in the 70s when players weren't allowed into a certain club in Florida, but all of the white players were. So there have been things that have gone on around the Red Sox. This particular ownership group over the last 20 years has done a lot to try to get past that with what they've done. But the lingering issue in Boston has long been racism. And as I covered the Yankees and the Mets before I covered the Red Sox, and I knew a lot of players around the game who would say they didn't want to play for the Red Sox, or when they did play against the Red Sox at Fenway Park, that was the one place where they heard things that they didn't hear anywhere else. And I don't know what you can do other than when that happens, to eject those people from the park and set an example that you hope other people will follow. But the Red Sox, as an organization now, are being very proactive. They're trying to do the right thing. But it's hard. How can you control the behavior of 35,000 people in a ballpark?
Right.
You really can't. You have to hope it starts from, I think, within the community and within the city, and that will lead to a better atmosphere at the ballpark. Mm.
You can find Pete on Twitter at Pete Abe. Lots of great experience, perspective, covering the Red Sox for the Globe since 2010, even longer in the greater sport overall. And I appreciate your candor always, Pete. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Annie.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.